If you were in the city today, you may have seen hundreds of law enforcement personnel and families of fallen law enforcement officers marching in the St. Jude March. It's been going on for 90 years. It's a wonderful, wonderful event. It was a beautiful day for it. Next week is National Police Week. And, you know, I hate to remind everyone, but this past week, 30-year-old Chicago police officer Luis Huesco was buried after being shot and killed coming home from his shift near his home in Gage Park. And it was just a particularly sad event. And we watched the city mourn the loss of one of our men in blue. You know, when men and women give their life to protect, you know, we have to pause and think, who would want to do this kind of work? What kind of people are suited for doing it? And what kind of toll does it take on people who face these kinds of things and the bad in society every single day? Today, we have a very special guest, Jay Wiley, who was a Baltimore police sergeant. He retired due to a disabling permanent injury in the line of duty. Afterwards, he went and he got some training and he went into the world of radio, and he hosted radio shows in Maryland and Florida. He's now a serious podcaster and host of a very popular law enforcement talk radio show heard on 111 stations nationwide and listened to by 40 million people. Jay, welcome to the show. How are you?
It's a pleasure to be here with you, Karen. Thanks so much for having me on the show on WGN Radio. And I'm doing great.
You sound great. And, you know, I was on your podcast. We had a really lively discussion about my representing John Gacy. And your show is interesting. You deal with law enforcement, but you deal with all aspects of law enforcement, including victims, including lawyers in the system, prosecutors and defense lawyers, and almost all aspects. And you know, you do such a good job. And thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much. We have a sanitized version that we see, that we hear, that we pass judgments on, but this gives the people the opportunity to tell their stories from their perspective. And it's an aspect we don't get to hear very often. So I love my guests.
And, you know, as I was saying before, I love to talk to police officers, but, you know, on the radio, police officers can't really, you know, the rules about talking in public about cases that are pending and for good reason, and I understand that. But that's why I'm just so excited to talk to you on air, because you were a police officer and you had a disability that caused by your line of duty injury. But now you're trained in speaking and you're trained in being a host. So now this is the perfect person to answer some of these questions.
I don't know how perfect, but
well,
thank you very much.
Yeah,
I can speak freely now.
Yeah, you can speak freely. What made you want to be a police officer at the very core that drove you to do this work?
Well, really, it was about service, public service. I wanted to be a Catholic priest at first, and I was in a high school seminary, and I decided that the calling just wasn't there for me. And probably junior year of high school is when I decided I wanted to go into being a police officer, and that's where it came from. I know it sounds corny, Karen, but I wanted to serve people. I really did.
Do you think that most of the police officers with whom you served were likewise motivated, or do people become police officers for other reasons?
I think the majority of the really good police officers that I worked with, and I had the extreme honor and privilege of working with some of the best people on the planet, they had a calling to do police work. And then there was a few that came into it because of the benefits. And they either got the bug, they got the calling, or they quickly found another way out of that career. And when I came on, Karen, it was 1980, it was a long time ago. And I was trained by a lot of Vietnam combat veterans, and we even had a few Korean War veterans that were command staff. And they were some of the best police you could ever, ever meet. They were really community-oriented.
What makes you good at being a police officer? I heard in one of your interviews you were talking about how it helps to be a salesperson. And when you first said it, I kind of was like scratching my head thinking, a police officer, a salesperson. Can you tell our listeners what you mean by that?
Well, a lot of what we did was quality of life issues. It was quality of life calls. And a perfect example was I didn't realize how skilled and trained I was in sales and presenting options to people. Until after retiring from police work. And one of the best examples I can give you is a domestic disturbance call where it's alcohol involved and they're just arguing. And I'm going to make up a name. We'd say, Joe, here's your options. You can leave for tonight, come back tomorrow, have a good weekend. Or I could arrest you and take you to jail. And if you want to fight, then I'll just call for help. And there'll be about 50 angry Baltimore police here ready to take care of business. And you go to the emergency room before you go to the jail. So the choice really is up to you. And most people, would, given that option, would choose for the less violent approach. They'd say, oh, you know what? I'm going to go away for the weekend. I'll go away for a day.
Even in their alcohol-impaired state, they were making good decisions because of the way you presented it to them. But, you know, isn't that
You kind of had to be very upfront about it. You couldn't mince words. You had to be very direct about it.
And, you know, I think that when you hear salesperson, maybe there's a negative connotation or something that you're selling something, you know, that you're not going to be able to deliver. But, I mean, I even think in my profession as a lawyer that so much of what I do is selling. I'm selling to a jury. I'm selling to the judge. Right. I'm trying to be persuasive. I'm actually trying to get my clients to do what I think, you know, would help them move into, you know, what their goals are. I try to get the other lawyer on the other side to try to compromise. So all of those skills are sales skills, right? Giving options, putting yourself in the other person's shoes and saying, what would I do if I were in opposition to me? And so I think that's really an astute observation about police officers.
Well, thank you very much. And people that trained me, that broke me in, were the ones that taught me that. And they're like, just be, you know, we were trained back in the day. This is before modern day policing. And it sounds weird saying that because I was a cop in the last century. I'm going to say cop. That's what the ultimate compliment. One of the things we would say is that you had to learn how to be skilled at what we call verbal judo. And what that meant was you would use foul, sometimes off-color language to get people off the game to convince them that violence was not a good option. And nowadays, if you do that, you're going to be looked upon as somehow or another, you're being discourteous. And I had many, many discourtesy complaints lodged against me for that very reason.
Well, interesting, because you're really just using the vernacular. You're using you're using language to try to appeal to people. And, you know, we all know that you can't talk down to people and you've got to speak in a way that they can identify with you. So that's unfortunate. But I think that's kind of the way our world is now. Everyone's offended by pretty much everything. So I hope.
Aren't they all offended by something?
Yeah.
To get offended about.
And you know what? And even if I'm offended by someone calling me something, I actually try to look to see where their heart is. You know, I mean, if you're saying it from a nice place, if an older gentleman is calling me honey, like, how could I get mad at that? I don't really get mad at that. Whereas I know some of my younger lawyers that I see are extremely offended and will, you know, lash out. But I guess that's...
Well, we had to learn to pick our battles wisely. Is it worth the drama that you're going to go through? And, you know, a lot of policing was about that. It was about options, not just for them, but options for you. Is it worth the aggravation? Because you're going to get heat no matter what you do.
Absolutely. We only have a few minutes before we break, but I want to ask you, are there other innate qualities that you have to have as a police officer? You know, are there some people that just can't do this job, or can everyone be trained to do this kind of work?
Well, I think there are some people that cannot do the job, no matter how skilled they are. They fly off the handle too easily. They take things too personal. They get upset. They lose their head, and they can't keep their head on a swivel. They get too laser focused on one thing. The innate qualities, I don't know really, Karen, if there are innate qualities, but one thing's for certain, you're going to learn, and you're going to learn quickly, because the reality is, we have a saying in police work, complacency kills, and it kills 100% of the time. And if you are not on the ball, someone is going to take you out.
And, you know, and I'm going to say, maybe I'll save this question for the other side, but, you know, I've heard Chicago police officers tell me that this requirement that the incoming officers have a college degree is not a good one. And at first I bristled and I thought, you know, if someone has a college degree, they've at least put their time in and they've put in the effort, you know, probably in law enforcement or what have you. What do you think about that requirement? Is that a good requirement or not?
Well, I met a lot of police that had college degrees that were horrible. They were the worst of the worst. And then I met a lot of police that just had barely made it out of high school that were the best of the best. Gender didn't factor into it. All those things. I think a college degree is nice if you can get that. However, it's not a good indicator that someone's going to be good on the job, because of the amount of stress involved. And that's not something that's taught in college. There's no degree on stress management. There's no degree on how to diffuse severe family disputes. There's nothing in college that is going to make someone a good police officer. That's just my experience.
And I suppose that to some extent, a college degree entitles a person to think that maybe they deserve the job rather than working at it. I guess maybe the idea is that it's nice, but it's not necessarily, and you shouldn't rely on it. But it's like everything else. Like, even the people who came out of really good law schools, unless you have empathy, ability to listen, you know, good people skills, you're trustworthy, you have good organizational skills, you're not going anywhere. I don't care what law school you went to. So those things, again, are not the ones you get through your education.
I agree with you 100%. And degree doesn't mean, you can go to the best school in the world and you can have all kinds of advanced degrees and be a total idiot. That's just the reality.
We're talking to Jay Wiley. We're talking about policing. And we'll be back after the news. This is Karen Conti on WGN. Welcome back. We're here with Jay Wiley. He is a retired Baltimore police sergeant, and he has a podcast, very, very well listened to, Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, heard on 111 stations nationwide and listened to by 40 million people. Jay, tell us a little bit about your podcast and what you hope to do with it.
Well, it started in 2017, and I've been in radio a long time. And the thing about radio, I love radio. I will always love radio. But no matter how much I treated like it was my own baby, how much I worked at a station, the moment I stopped working there, I stopped getting paid. And I wanted to do a podcast that really addressed and really narrowed down on PTSD, stress, mental health issues for first responders and their spouses, and let people know there's light at the end of the tunnel. And then we got recruited by radio. A radio station upstate New York reached out, heard an episode, said, could you create a radio version, which we did. We're now syndicated through Talk Media Network, and I just did the math. I did some Google searching. Karen, we're on 116 affiliated radio stations broadcasting to 44 million combined population. And when I pitched to radio stations, it's pitched to them as doing for radio what the ID channel does for television. So it's very much a first-person, experience-driven show. There are tons of shows out there, and I'm not saying good, right, wrong, indifferent, that go into opinions, that go into politics, that go into way things they think things should be done. Well, mine, I try not to do that. I really try to focus on going from their experience. For example, one of the most recent episodes I had was a woman whose husband and daughter, young infant daughter, were killed by an impaired driver leaving New York City. And she talked about how that tremendously impacted her, obviously, but how it leads her to do what she does today, working with impaired and distracted driving, being an accredited instructor for a law enforcement agency in the state of New Jersey. It's really, really profound. And I think there's very few platforms that do that. So I'm thrilled. And apparently the radio station seemed to like it, too.
That's fabulous. And you're an excellent host. Let's go back to talking about being a police officer. Can you give us some insights about what should we know about the everyday life of a police officer that we may not know?
Well, the number one thing was, and I thought I had a pretty good idea. I grew up reading Joseph Wambaugh books and watching his series on television and all that. And I thought I really was prepared for when I got hired by Baltimore back in 1980, I was thinking, am I physically tough enough to do this? And that's not the majority of the job. There do come times where you have to be prepared to go hands-on and fight for your life. But the vast majority of it is not that way. And I think he said it was like 80%, 90% sheer boredom, routine police work, and then, 10% adrenaline, life or death situations. What I didn't understand, I wasn't prepared for, was, and people say this all the time, you know what you signed up for? No, I didn't. I had no idea how violent and how out of control people really were. And the amount of violence that I confronted, the amount of death I confronted, the poverty, the degradation that people lived in, that they would never find a way out of. And you were called to try to handle it. And you were also the brunt of, you're the one government agency that's available all the time. And you would catch it regardless of what it was. Whatever the dispute was, whatever unhappiness was, you're going to hear about it. And then we got to court. And I always say this, and we said in our interview that Monday morning quarterbacks, they dissect for months what you do from the relative safety of their office. And the most dangerous thing they'll see is a rusty paperclip. So you have to decide. And ultimately it came down to, I'm going to protect my life and the life of someone else. And if it came down to my life or theirs, I would do everything to win that battle.
And just, I mean, I think of this, I think, who goes to work, with a bulletproof vest? Who goes to work knowing, hey, if I make a mistake and I mess up on my client's file, I get sued for money damages, I have insurance for it, I move on with my life. You guys, you make a mistake, you could lose not only your job, but your entire profession for the rest of your life. And worse, you could be a subject of a murder charge, which we see more frequently now. In making these snap decisions, I certainly don't want to be in that situation. And it's terrifying. It must be terrifying to put your finger on that trigger, knowing that your options are going to be difficult, no matter what happens.
We had a Santa Quinn, Utah police officer was killed, a hit and run by a semi truck. And I'm sure that officer and their family did not think that today was going to be the day that they were going to work and that would be the last we'd see them, that it would be over.
I just don't know how you do that. And you touched on this when you were talking about this, but, you go to work every day and, I think I see people who are in turmoil, but their turmoil is usually financial. Again, if I take a criminal case, I do see that people's life and liberty might be at stake. But you confront these horrific things, the worst violence, the worst poverty, people with terrible mental illness, people who are bad to each other and drugs and all of these things. How does a police officer come home after seeing a side of the world like that and live a normal life? Is it possible? And if it is possible, what do you do to make that possible?
I think it is possible. In my own case, it was possible for a very long time. And I had this psychological thing I would do, Karen, with the soft body armor and the Velcro, that when I strapped it on, when I took it off, I would try to psychologically undressed from police J to father J or husband J. And it worked very well for a long time until it didn't work anymore. That was the problem. And one of the things is that our police nowadays in particular, we're so short staffed that so many, they're not getting breaks. They're not getting breaks from the stress, from the drama, from the trauma, from all the violence. And they're being forced into working extra duty, and then there's ones volunteering for it. They never have a day off. One of the things that I always thought was corny was and I tell people now, if you're going to do that, if you're going to be a police officer, it's great, but make sure if you're into stamp collecting, continue to do that. If you go to church festivals and fairs and all that stuff and you volunteer for that, do that. If you brown bag your lunch every day, do that. Don't stop being that person. Don't let police work take over your whole life. because it can very gradually and it can become your whole life. Then you have backtrack to these officers who never, ever get a break from it. The mental health issues just go up and up and up because they never, ever calm down. And then, in order to sleep, one of the biggest problems I had was working midnight shift. Then I go to court, and I'd be in court for 3, 4, 5 hours, then told to go home at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Now you're trying to get to sleep and try to get 4 or 5 hours sleep before you get up for work in a midnight shift. And you drink alcohol to knock yourself out. And guess what? Eventually that can, for many people, turn into a problem. And then you wind up withdrawing from your family. You don't talk to your spouse the way you should. You become short-tempered. You become irritable because you never get a break from this. And it creates more problems. And lastly, is that so many of our police nowadays that, and it's not just nowadays, it's been since the 60s, that this has been an issue, and what they rely on to resolve it does not work. And it creates more problems. And it leads to marital issues, which leads to often employment issues, which can skyrocket into making the ultimate decision of ending your life. And that's something that people do way too often. And that's been an issue since the Joseph Wamba days.
And we've been watching just a lot of those happen in the city of Chicago.
Chicago's overwhelmed with it.
Yeah, it's just really sad. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about those split decisions that we were talking about. We have a case here in Chicago that happened, and I want to discuss with you how those decisions are made and how very difficult they are. We're talking to Jay Wiley. He is a retired Baltimore police sergeant, and he is the host of the really wonderful Law Enforcement Talk radio show. We'll be back in a minute on WGN. Welcome back on the Cinco de Mayo. Unfortunately, the parade was canceled today because of gunfire. That's too bad. Anyway, we're here with Jay Wiley. He is a retired Baltimore police sergeant, and he hosts a radio show called Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Jay, if people want to listen to your show, how would they listen to it?
Well, the best way to get it right now would be you can listen to podcast versions for free on the website, letradio.com. That's letradio.com. And, of course, we are in surrounding areas, Quincy, Illinois, and Wisconsin, but not Chicago yet. That is on the radar.
All right. I will be the first person to know that, I would imagine. Let's talk about, there was a case, and I'm not asking you to know about it, but there was a police shooting here a couple of weeks ago. There was Dexter Reed. There were 5 tactical officers in plain clothes. They stopped him for a seatbelt violation. He had been out on a drug charge. I'm sorry, it was actually a firearm charge. He refused to obey their commands, and he ended up shooting one of the officers in the arm, and the police shot 96 rounds in about 41 minutes, killing him. And obviously, both sides of this issue were very vocal about it. And, you know, again, like, it seems like taking any side here becomes political. And I, like you, Jay, don't like to get political. But when someone shoots a firearm at a police officer, what are you trained to do? I mean, what is the idea, you know, in an immediate basis?
Well, I was a revolver police, so that's how long it was. And we started transitioning shortly after retired to semi-automatics, and there's a reason why. But what we're trained to do is when you are confronted with a life and death situation, you fire until the threat is neutralized. If you have 4 or 5, in this case, I think it's 5 officers. I'm a little familiar with it, but I wasn't there. And let's just say they're carrying Glock 19s, and there's 14-round clips or 15-round clips. And the person's still moving. If you shoot at a police officer, you deserve what you get. I'm going to repeat that. And they have every right in the world to protect their lives and fire until the threat is neutralized. End of story. If that guy had not made the choice to A, skip out in court, B, to shoot at a police officer, to not comply with their demands, to shoot a police officer, he deserved everything he got. I don't have a problem with that at all. I don't care if it's 150 rounds. If no one else was hurt, that's fine.
And again, you know, I try not to be opinionated, but I'm kind of with you on that. I mean, just think if that were your son or your husband or your daughter, you know, who is being shot at by someone for no good reason, who's not supposed to have a gun, who is, you know, basically arrested for not supposed to be having a gun. And then now he's got a gun. He's defying the police. And he shot the police officer in the arm, which is like mid body, which could have easily a few inches over been a deadly firing. Right. I don't know. When this kind of thing happens and then you hear the you know, these people are going to be fired. I don't know if they are. There's going to be lawsuits. There are already lawsuits and perhaps even criminal charges. What does this do to the morale of the police department? And what does this do for people who decide, you know, are deciding whether or not they want to be a police officer?
Well, it's horrible for the morale. Number one, it makes everybody second guess what they do. And so many Chicago police officers and so many police officers, they hesitate a moment, and it costs them their lives. And that's the reason why. The vast majority of undue stress and pressure and turmoil that I felt in my career didn't come from the streets, didn't come from the hardened criminals that were often released multiple times, which we can talk about, like this case. It was from internal pressures from the department and City Hall. Are there going to be lawsuits? I would be shocked if there weren't. However, they had every right in the world to stop that car. They knew who this guy was. They had a good idea what they were getting into. And that's their job. Timothy McVeigh, people forget, he was found, yeah, the Oklahoma City bomber, by a routine traffic stop by an Oklahoma State trooper, I believe it was, pulled over, and they put two and two together. How many lives have been saved off traffic stops? There have been plenty. If this guy had continued on and shot and killed someone else and police didn't do anything about it, they'd be filing lawsuits. The police didn't do their job. So you're darned if you do, darned if you don't.
It's just, I keep shaking my head and say, I don't know that I could do that job. I just don't know that I could. Would you encourage someone now, a young person who said, hey, I have the calling. I want, as you said, I want to be of service to my community, to the public. I want to be a police officer. Would you encourage them?
I do. I discouraged one of my daughters from doing it because she knew what I went through. So I didn't have to really preach very hard. It's a very admirable profession, and it's a great profession. We do a lot of good. But you're going to see a lot of horrible things, and you're going to experience a lot of horrible things, and it's going to leave a big mark on you, not just on you, but your spouse, your family as well. If you have children, they're going to be impacted by this. So you need to be prepared, and you need to be proactive, and you need to ask yourself the simple question: am I fully prepared to? And we talk about the taking the life thing, the shooting, the life and death. Use of force things, that's one thing. But are you really prepared for the decomposing bodies? Are you really prepared for the absolute destitute way that people live? Are you really prepared for the violence that so-called loved ones have licked on each other? Because most people are not, and I was not.
Do you think after all these years now that you've been retired and you know, you had physical scars, you probably have mental scars. Obviously, you retired on a medical disability as a result of an injury that you received in the line of duty. What scars do you have today? And do you still have nightmares? Do you still have a view of the world that was different, that is different now than it was when you before you became a police officer?
You already know the answer to this question, Karen. Yeah. I don't have nightmares very often anymore. Every now and then they'll pop up. But my wife and I, who I met years after retiring from police work, it's really imperative to me that I live in a quiet neighborhood where I don't have a lot of stress. I don't watch body cam videos. I don't watch dash cam videos. I don't watch things that are too realistic because it creates an automatic response, a physiological response. It takes me a long time to get calmed down from. I try to avoid being confrontational with people because I don't have an off switch. It takes a long time for me to get back. I pray a lot. I meditate a lot. I do a lot of things. I go to bed around the same time every day. I eat around the same time every hour of the day that I'm supposed to, all to maintain my mood. Because I'll just say this. I have, I'll just be blunt. I have post-traumatic stress disorder. And the last shooting I was involved in, the one that ended my career, a guy with a stolen car, loaded with crack cocaine, tried to shoot me with my weapon while it was still in my hand. We fired off all six shots, and fortunately, both lived. But I thought I sprained my wrist, and I had three surgeries, two steel plates put in my right hand and wrist. I was retired at the age of 33. And I could not fall asleep without hearing gunshots running through my head. It took a long time. So I don't volunteer to go back into situations that are going to trigger that, if that answers your question.
Has anyone ever suggested that police officers have a mandatory once a week or once every 2 weeks session with a counselor? Because it seems to me that it would have to be proactive, and it would have to be on an ongoing basis and not wait until something like this happens or wait until there's a suicide thought in the head. You know, has that ever been suggested?
Well, I think it's great, but the truth is financially most departments can't afford it. So here's what I tell people that they're going to police work. Now, the two things I say is what I said earlier. Don't lose sight of what makes you human. Keep doing the things that you used to do. If you're active in the church, stay active in the church. If you do this, do that. If you like to cook, whatever it is you like to do, continue to do that. But here's the thing I tell people. You go to a dentist every year, and you get a checkup. You go to a general physician, you get a checkup. Find a mental health therapist, social worker, psychologist, whatever, that is trained and experienced in trauma, and go see them once a year on your own. Don't make the department make you do it. Don't trust those people, because they're there to protect the department and the city. They're not there to help you. They're really not. Go there and be proactive. Treat it like it's a way of preventative things, and then do the things they tell you to do. That's the most important part of this equation, is you're going to get damaged, you're going to get dinged up, but that's an explanation. It's not an excuse. It's an explanation. It's not an excuse. That means there's things you got to do to stay level-headed. And the best cure is prevention, if you ask me.
I want to ask you one final question about your radio show. Your radio show is Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show with Jay Wiley. Tell our listeners where they can catch the podcast. It's not in Chicago yet. It's on the horizon, but they can get the podcast versions where?
Well, you can just get it at our website, letradio.com, www.letradio.com. Radio.com. If you consume podcasts on Apple, they're there. Spotify, they're there. They're all in the podcast players. But the easiest way is our website, letradio.com. And you can communicate with me there as well.
And you can probably catch my podcast with Jay. I talk about my book, Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy. We had a really nice conversation. And you're an excellent host and an excellent person. And I just was delighted that you were able to join me today.
Thank you very much, Karen. Very much appreciated.
All right. You take care of yourself. In honor of National Police Week, which is upcoming, that was Jay Wiley.